Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to target nearly every mood and health concern that you can think of. I'm talking about Mood.com's incredible line of functional gummies. And you can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code BROS. Forget the one-size-fits-all supplements that you can only get high on. We're done with that, all right? Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood that you're looking for, whether that's the Mind Magic gummies for deep work and creativity, or the PMS support to ease cramps and balance mood swings, or their sexual euphoria gummies to help you feel ready for action and turn every touch into a full body experience. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much anywhere these days, but Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get to that perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with the code BROS. So head to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use the promo code BROS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
Welcome to Drinking Bros, presented by GhostBed.com. Sit back, relax, and grab a fucking drink.
Stop shuffling through life like a zombie. You're bumming everybody out. Grab a CardoMax Energy Intensifier and wake up. Owned and operated by former Navy SEAL Sean Mattson, CardoMax's Energy Intensifier will help you power through your workouts and dead afternoons with vitamins B3, B6, B12, caffeine, and BCAAs. Use the promo code DB to get 30% off your next four orders at CardoMax.com. That's CardoMax.com, helping you achieve your max.
Well, it's fake news day, folks. Fake news. We had some real news. Special guest Peter Boghossian here today. You've been on the show before.
I have been.
We had a good time.
Great time, yeah.
Your goal in life, I guess, is to, I guess, through the process of learning how to turn your enemies into friends, teach other people how to do the same thing, maybe.
Yeah, so maybe Plato talks about this in The Republic. Maybe the people I think are my enemies actually aren't my enemies. And so maybe I should be believing different things, or maybe they should be believing different things. So to figure out what's true is the most important.
Explain that. So I always say, like, who loves you more? Somebody who coddles you and pats you on the head while you're jamming a fork into an electrical socket, or somebody who slaps it out of your hand and calls you an idiot? You know what I mean? I mean, obviously, that's two extreme examples, but...
No, but the sentiment is there, and often, well, I think it's really important to speak bluntly to people, to speak bluntly to your friends, and if what I mean by that is being honest and being forthright with them, but not on social media, right? If you have a problem with me and I have a problem with you, I'm going to look you in the eye and say, can I swear? I can swear.
You can say whatever the fuck you want.
Like, you fucked up. Did this. The key thing, I think, is to figure out whose voice doesn't matter.
So you mean, what are you like? Is it some kind of hierarchical structure? Like, you're not the expert in this, or you're not the aggrieved party? What does that mean?
Okay. So if somebody criticized you for a position you held or something you had on the show, like, give me an example of somebody for whom that would matter. Like, who do you respect would say something to you and be like, okay, well, maybe I
made a mistake?
Well, I mean, no one. But it
it's got to be somebody. You've got to have somebody.
No, I mean, it would be the information, not the person. You know what I mean?
I do.
But there are some people who I would dismiss immediately.
Exactly.
Right. Okay. So like somebody like yourself, Douglas Murray, the Weinsteins, I have a lot, great deal of respect for those guys. Even Sam Harris, although he got a little crazy on the Trump stuff. I don't like Trump either, but he got a little wild on it. But yeah, any of those, anybody that I see intentionally put data ahead of feelings, then I will.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and what you said about the fork, I think that's why I said the sentiment is absolutely correct. You're doing that because you care about someone. If you didn't give a shit about somebody, you just let them electrocute themselves.
Exactly. Right? Yeah.
So I believe, and I genuinely do believe this, and you know, I taught in prisons for a long time, and I think that this came through in those interactions with prisoners. I think people really do want to know what's true. And I think right now that's incredibly difficult to figure that out.
Yeah, well, how do you, I guess, I think there's a lot of people out there working towards trying to figure out what's going on. Right. What I see more than I would like to from both sides, I guess more so from the left right now, but right, it's spiking the football. Like, there's no, why are we dancing on each other's graves so much?
Right.
Like, that, it just doesn't seem like,
yeah.
So what do you benefit from that? To me, that's like, that's dopamine. That's short-term stupid bullshit, right?
So we've given ourselves a recipe to take ourselves away from the good life and throw ourselves into delusion. For example, one of the worst things that we see happening now in the university system and in the K-12 system, I actually have something that a friend of mine at OHSU, which is a medical hospital in Oregon, they wanted the students to separate on the basis of race. Okay. So it's almost like a backward roadmap that we're creating. We're starting to look at people on the basis of their immutable character. And not only, we're teaching people to do this.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, remember, the key is not whether or not racism is present. It's how does racism manifest?
Right.
And the worst thing we can do as a people and as a society, and basically, frankly, as humans, the worst thing we can do is start looking at people in terms of their race. We need to do exactly the opposite.
Yeah, why? What would be the benefit of that, exactly? I mean, if you, there's some quote, I can't remember exactly how it goes. I think I posted it on my social media a month ago or so, but it was like something to the effect of, if you behave in victory the same way your enemy behaved, then you haven't won anything.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because what were you fighting for exactly? You were fighting for nothing. And I think that's the big, that is the big misunderstanding between the two sides about the difference between equality and equity. You know what I mean?
I'm so glad. That's what I was thinking about when you were
like equity, equity is revenge to me. It's revenge racism. Equality is a whole other subject.
Yeah, I think independently, if you look at it that way, but I don't think that many. I think it's important to ascribe good intentions to folks, even if they have deranged beliefs, which is what we see a lot of now.
Yeah, the principle of charity, right?
Yeah, it's hermeneutic of charity. Mm-hmm. It's right. And so I think that one of the things that's really important to do is, okay, these people are, they mean well. And I don't really think anybody disagrees with some of the, not core tenets, but the principles. Yes, there has been egregious racism. Mm-hmm. Yes, there has been and still continues to be racism, transphobia, misogyny. Given that that's the case, I mean, the disagreement could be, how is it caused? Is it cause of systems? How bad is it? But given that we agree upon those things, the question is, what's the path forward?
Right.
And we have two fundamentally different competing views of what this country should be and how we should proceed. And I'll tell you in no uncertain terms, one is deranged and will lead to some kind of civil war. Mm. And the other one will lead to the promise of America, which is the shining city upon a hill.
Right. So that brings us to the first thing, the first article today. I'll read some summary of it and you can respond to this. So
just so you know, I've been deeply involved in a culture war here, and so I haven't been up on the news
at all. Well, this might actually be on your radar. It's hard to say because it's the California Department of Education has received a barrage of criticism from parents and experts after posting a draft of potential revisions to the state's guidelines on math curriculum.
Right.
The guidelines, which advise the state's school administrators, would discourage the concept of gifted students while injecting social justice issues such as gender theory and equality into coursework. According to the New York Times, the draft, quote, suggested that math should not be colorblind and that teachers should use lessons to explore social justice, for example, by looking out for gender stereotypes and word problems. or applying math concepts to topics like immigration or inequality. Now, right. Your response to that. And STEM.
Yeah.
Right? Where it is, I think of STEM the same way I think of the military in a lot of ways, and it's Veterans Day, by the way.
Right. Thank you to everyone who served.
Absolutely, yeah. It is designed to be the ultimate meritocracy on one side because data is data, and on one side because if you don't do the right thing in war, you die. You know what I mean? The costs obviously are very different, but the principle is the same in my mind. So in STEM especially, like if you're talking about literature and philosophy and stuff, that is the doors are all locked. We've got guards outside, so we have time to ponder. You know what I mean? But we don't change policy necessarily based on this stuff. This is us trying to figure out how to be better people. STEM, on the other hand, and this is stupid no matter which way you card it. Yeah. I'm just saying, it's even dumber because you're talking calling math. I mean, we've got the Secretary of Transportation.
It's dangerous as well.
Yeah, it certainly is. Yeah. I mean, it tells, what are you telling kids exactly? Like you're trying, this is, in my opinion, I believe what's happening isn't about today. I believe it's programming kids to believe in this hierarchy that exists. This oppression,
the oppression hierarchy. Yeah. My friend Gads calls it the oppression Olympics. Yeah. And the question is, there's been we have a few questions. Mm. One, there's ideological capture of our institutions, and venerable institutions as well. But it's in academia, which could segue at some point to the new university we're creating.
Yep.
But the question is, how did it get there and what happened? So, if any of your viewers are interested, Lyle Asher has done some amazing pieces. He's a...
Are you talking about on theory and how it's woven its way into everything?
No, I mean, I'm like, as a fact, here's what... Look, if I gave you a magic wand and I say, you're going to wave this wand tomorrow and we're going to eliminate all wokeism from K-12 schools and you're dancing around the studio, you're waving the wand, this is the best day of your life. Well, I got news for you, man. The schools will repopulate within a very, very short period of time, probably the next day. And here's why, and this is what people don't understand, and this is what they need to understand. So the way I can't go and teach in a K-12 system. You can't go. You need a teaching certificate.
Right.
You get teaching certificates through colleges of education. You get certified. Once you're certified, then you can teach in the schools. The problem is that all of those institutions, all of those colleges of ed right now are woke. They're all based upon this idea.
So it's a self-licking ice cream cone at this point.
I've never thought about it like that.
I mean, they're just kind of churning out. There's no... why would education be responsible? I guess if you're going to monitor it. Like the idea of the Department of Education being filled by other educators. That doesn't make a lot of sense.
Okay, but even to step back from that, what is the fundamental question? What's the... Everybody's smoking. What are you guys smoking?
This is weed. Oh. Would you like some?
No, I got a lot of stuff to do tonight. I'm fine. But,
well, I mean, it's a hybrid. You'll be fine.
I mean, I recommend weed if you have a lot to do today.
Yeah, that's exactly. See, he's our doctor. You can tell. He not only does he not have a teaching certificate, I don't think he has a driver's license either.
Oh, okay. Well, I really want to talk about that for a second. Yeah. So I love jujitsu. I do jiu-jitsu.
He does too.
Oh, do you? Right on. Well, my plan to get my brown belt was derailed this year by COVID. But anyway. Let's say that I said to you, look, I can't see him because the monitor's in the way, but like, where is he? Where is he?
All right.
Yeah. Hey man. So let's say that I said to you, I have a new technique. It's called the pinky technique and you poke people with your pinky and you can knock them out. What would you say to me?
Let me see that technique, man.
That's exact
evidence.
Did you hear what he said?
Right. Yeah.
Right. Evidence. Okay.
Sam Harris used to say this all the time. He would say that if you went into a loving family and told the husband that his wife was cheating on him, he would believe you only up to the point that you could prove that statement.
Right.
But if you just casually tell people that some invisible sky tyrant snapped his fingers in the universe existed, they would just believe you.
Right. Like, now, but this is important. What's your name?
Giorgio.
So I didn't talk to you beforehand, right? You have no idea. I was going to say, okay, I didn't know you did jiu-jitsu. I never seen you before in my life. But the idea is I immediately knew that he would say, let's test it.
Mm-hmm.
Because if your paradigm that you're going to things is evidence, that's what you do. Now, Giorgio, now here's the pill that's hard to swallow. It is better for you to not learn anything, to look at the wall, than it is to learn a martial art that's not functional and delusional.
Right, because it gives you confidence that should not be there. Correct. And you're going to put yourself into a situation.
And you're going to do things like maybe you're going to keep your hands low or you're going to break up every time there's a
goes around. Yeah, yeah.
This is what's happening in education now. What's happening is that we're actually teaching people fantasy-based ideas that are untethered to reality.
Right. And it's kind of the same, in my opinion, it's one of the chief complaints about string theory right now. Is that it's a bunch of untestable.
Brian Greene talks about that. Yeah, that's right.
I mean, he's been, for lack of a better phrase, balls deep in it up there in Columbia for a while. Yeah. I think the
Brian Keating has talked about it. Lawrence Krauss has talked about it.
A lot, yeah. A lot of the guys who are fundamental in some of the early research from string theory are still like, hey, it's still untestable. Like, we don't know. But that's the point. If unfalsifiable
but that's different,
that's not real, right?
Yeah, but that's different because it's just – all that would mean is – I think Brian Keating said this, but it's just a waste of really good math.
Right.
Like, what? The guys wants to do their, spend their time doing, who gives a shit? But the problem is that this is affecting the society. This is affecting the institutions.
Right.
This is affecting education. This isn't a fucking game.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not only for today, like I said before, not only for today, but think about the intrinsic problems with the boomer generation and how their parents use certain types of language that formed the way they thought about races and homosexuals and shit like
or
that.
Or even homelessness, like the word bum.
Or even even veterans, like shell shock and shit
that. Right.
George Carlin did a great bit on this about how nobody started taking it serious until they got a scientific name for it, right? But yeah, I mean, it is pervasive and dangerous, not only now, but into the future.
And that's why that language is the language that we use is so important. But the idea that we would want to base public policy on evidence is literally the least controversial idea that should exist.
Right, yeah.
I mean, look, you can...
I mean, I don't know how you argue with that. That doesn't...
Yeah. I mean, look...
But how does it... That's not congruent with, not to attack one side or the other, but Pelosi has said on a couple of occasions, once with Obamacare and once again, that we got to pass this bill so we can see what's in it. Like, I think you've got the cart before the horse there.
Right.
Like, we want to, when if you're, like right now with all the COVID stuff, we're making long-term policy and life decisions for people based on a short-term issue, right, for the most part. That seems like a problem. It seems like a problem that a lot of other places seem to have figured it out in ways that we can't. And we're supposed to be, I mean, America sucks at everything now. What are we good at anymore?
I don't know. Well, innovation. Matt Ridley has a great book about that. We still hold the promise as a country for enlightenment values, tradition, due process, freedom of speech, freedom of religion. Those values have been undermined, and I think it's really important to not frame this as a right or a left issue. Mm. This is an American issue.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Sometimes I feel like America, and maybe some other parts of the West, but especially here. Like we're the Roman aristocracy and all the rest of the world that's still kind of learning how to govern and all this stuff are kind of the plebs, and we are just tearing each other apart because we're sitting around thinking too much instead of doing shit. I mean, purpose is like the most important thing in your life, right?
Yeah. Okay. So that's a second issue. I think we're tearing each other apart and over what? Like, over such stupid shit, like, over things that we have already figured out.
Here's the fucking thing that drives me crazy. So, about $1 trillion was robbed out of the black community through not paying for slavery, and how that money aggregates over the years, and then there's the fact that about 83% or so of wealth transfers from one generation to the next.
Right.
Otherwise, it comes from mortgages and shit like that, which they've also been boxed out of because of Jim Crow laws and shit. So, we know that there's an issue. Does it solve the issue to burn down a police station? Or does it solve the issue to make more black entrepreneurs in a creator economy?
I'll tell you right now, it would solve all this talk about equity, everybody screaming about diversity and inclusion. Where are all the schools? And I'm hesitant to say, let me phrase it like this. The schools in low-income areas that are black, have those schools been fixed? Have we financed those schools? If you want a solution, you want to talk about something practical that every single American should be able to get behind is, let's give every American, regardless of skin color, a public education of the first rate. Let's give everybody an opportunity.
Germany did that, by the way. Not only did they do it, they did it very efficiently, where you graduate high school at 17 and not 18, and you have your college degree by 20, right? Your undergraduate degree in 3 years. They've done a lot of, and as a matter of fact, they just passed a bill, I think in 2018, where even if you immigrate to Germany, you get free because they don't want a population of stupid motherfuckers. But it's not just college degree for its own sake, right?
This is what gets, I don't know if you want to go, this is gets extremely deep and complicated fast.
Yeah.
So here's part of the problem, and it's going to seem like I'm throwing you a curveball, and I am. So the problem is if, you know, Viktor Orban in Hungary defunded certain departments and universities because they really were left-wing ideological camps. Mm-hmm. They were woke indoctrination centers. So here's the problem in which we find. If we, and one of the things the Biden administration wants to do is, we're talking about doing, is forgiving some debt for student loans. If we fund the universities adequately, quote unquote adequately, one of the things that's going to happen is that the disciplines in those universities that are already not tethered to reality have no incentive to reform themselves. Mm-hmm. So they're going to keep teaching nonsense that's not tethered to reality. Now, here's the curveball that nobody's going to like me to talk about. What people have wrong, particularly conservatives have wrong, is if you don't defund the universities, then what happens is that you have increasing the universities looking for other budgetary sources and funds, and they look to China.
Right.
So those students come here, they take our, I mean, even have, you gotta watch the language that you say.
Yeah, you don't want to sound like a South Park character.
Yeah,
right?
you have to be so careful with how you frame this.
I don't. I just say whatever. But
yeah, but there is, because there are legitimate instances of discrimination, et cetera. I think it's really important that, I think that the words people use matter. And so what happens is that those universities and institutions will rely upon, for example, the Chinese, and then you've gotten into a whole nother set of problems, particularly in the STEM.
I mean, they're sewing fucking human faces on monkeys over there.
It is an extremely complicated problem.
It's fucked up.
The root of all of it is what you initially said from the article, is that we have virtually every college of education that gives people teaching certificates is woke.
Yeah.
And as long as that pipeline exists, we will have wokeness. We will have problems until the ideology falls into
there's no question about that. Yeah. I mean, I'm actually on the side of getting rid of the debt, but for economic reasons. As I said before, the middle class amasses wealth primarily through their mortgage, right? And now, I guess, to some degree, their 401k as well. But primarily still, they amass wealth through their mortgage and then through inheritance of previous generations
as well. You should check out Robert Reicher's stuff on that from the Clinton administration.
One of my friends is an economist at Berkeley. Very smart. We don't agree with a lot of stuff.
I'm amazed how lucid you can be for being stoned. Like, that's incredible to me.
I just, start when I wake up. You don't want to see me. Like, I'll be tripping over stuff if I'm not high, to be honest.
Yeah, he's off his game if he's not high.
Yeah, I'm like,
high all the time?
Yeah, you're a little older, so this will make sense to you.
Yeah.
It's like different RPM records for me. Like, I've got something with my brain, and if I get to the right level, then I'm good. And if I'm not, I'm just kind of like, scatterbrained a little bit.
When I used to smoke pot, I don't anymore, but it used to bother me how much stuff I used to forget.
Oh, I don't forget much. In general, but definitely not when I'm... And it's state-dependent memory, though, right? So you just got to get high again. That's your problem if you haven't gotten high again.
Yeah, well, I mean, the other thing is I find in the very, very rare occasion that I do smoke, when I do smoke pot, it just makes me want to do things like, eat carbs and ice cream and sugar, which is, like, really terrible for me.
I guess, yeah. I mean, you just got... It's like any other time, though, when you're bored. Some people's
boredom is an internal state, though.
I agree with that. Yeah. But I'm fine. I think boredom is necessary sometimes. Like, you need your brain needs time to rest, especially if you're one of those people like me that doesn't sleep a lot. I'm going to stare at a wall for a few minutes and be bored throughout the day.
Well, that's why, like, I end every day with I watch a little television. I watch cheesy. I'm watching a show, UFO, from the 70s. I'm a science fiction fanatic.
Yeah.
And but anyway.
The lady and I are currently, watching for the first time, Battlestar Galactica.
Oh.
I've watched it 10 times.
Yeah, wonderful. Brilliant.
The newer one. The older one's good, too. It's okay.
Brilliant
for
show.
Stuff.
Almost does a great job on that. Surprising character arcs.
Yeah, it's it was very well written for sure. And that guy, the dude who wrote and produced that, has done a number of other like Canadian sci-fi movies. Yeah. Continuum was one of them.
I'm drawing a blank on his name.
I don't remember his name either.
Anyway.
But right. Yeah, so on the education thing, there's... We're seeing it right now. I believe the rate of home ownership has dropped from 63% to 46% in the last 25 years, something like that. That's a problem. That means the middle class's capacity even to create wealth is disappearing. And now you see...
Yeah, home ownership has dropped. Right. Yeah, right.
And you'll see rentals go the same way that everything else has gone in this corporatist environment, which is to say, maybe it starts out with a lot of mom and pop, but conglomerates eventually buy all that shit up. And then we're talking about something, in my opinion, that's far more dangerous than Marxism, and that is corporatism, right? Where money controls everything, not just power, because power you can defeat with a gun. You know what I mean? Honestly, at the end of the day, it comes down to one guy shooting another guy in the face. But when it's all driven literally by dollar, let's imagine that everybody in government was Peter Thiel, for example. Mm. You know what I mean? Not that I dislike the guy, but he makes very cold, harsh decisions based on money that are pretty low risk, right? That's kind of his thing. Yeah. But if in a corporatist environment, there's actually a great quote from Battlestar Galactica when Adama's talking about how the military can't be the police.
Yeah.
Because the military's job is to defend the country from existential threats, right? From enemies of the state.
That's why we have posse comitatus.
Right.
Too. Yeah.
And police's job is to protect the people. Correct. The problem is when the military becomes the police, the people become the enemy of the state.
Right.
And that's a big fucking problem. Now, it happens in any kind of authoritarian government, but when it's motivated by money, then people who are ethically weak and physically strong can then be turned right into that. You don't see a whole lot. Like, at some point in ideological movements, you typically see the physically strong rebel against that shit because it's the.
Like, if you were to triage this, how serious of a problem do you think this is?
When you say this, what do you mean?
Exactly what you just said, you know, the
corporatism thing.
Yeah.
I think it's a huge fucking problem. Huh. I think it's, I don't know if I would say probably a 4 to 6 range, something like that, which in my opinion is once you get to that upper, you know, third, that's when you're starting to see like violent conflict and stuff. We've seen some degree of that, but we haven't seen anything like the late 19th century where companies were paying thugs and mafia to go beat up labor union people and shit like that. It just, we're not quite there yet. It's still pockets.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of the communists and what was then Czechoslovakia and Vaclav Havel and Poland and Lech Wałęsa, and how the very thing, the labor union, was under a communist state was smashed by the communist state.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it's that first they came for the socialists, right? I mean, that's one of the most prescient. I think that's one of the more prescient and important pieces of material ever written down to paper because it seems so obvious.
I think about that all the time in terms of wokeness.
Mm.
I think that about all, you know, people. So
well, there's that theory. There's that saying: the left always eats their own.
Yeah,
right?
Ouroboros, the snake that eats its own tail.
Yeah,
right.
Jesus Christ! I mean, it's like you don't see this coming. I don't understand. But I guess when you get so used to shielding yourself from reality or whatever,
Socrates says that in the Republic, dude. It's all in Plato.
Yeah.
Socrates says it's not the fear of doing, but of suffering wrong that calls forth the reproaches of those who revile injustice. Yeah. In other words, it's like it's never when everybody's screaming for everybody else to be canceled. It's only when they get canceled. Say, hey, wait a second, man. Now you've gone too far.
That's the problem in the fucking comedy club today. It's what Chappelle, Rogan, and these guys and Andrew Schultz are always talking about. It's like, you were laughing up until the point that it got personal for you.
Right.
Then shut the fuck up, dude. That's not real empathy.
Which is why South Park is just genius.
Yeah, they've lit everybody up for 30 years almost.
Right.
Jesus Christ.
Right. I used to watch that as a parenting advice to new parents out there. I used to watch that with my kids. One of the best things you can do with your kids.
You think so? Because this generation right now got raised on South Park, and they're all a bunch of pussies.
I don't know if they got...
No, these were the people that didn't like South Park.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know if they got raised on South Park.
What were they... What did this generation watch? Blimpy and shit? Or whatever the fuck his name
is? No, Blimpy? This is the... Everybody gets a trophy. You know, everybody...
Yeah, that's true.
That's my generation.
The self-esteem movement.
You can just tell who liked South Park and who didn't.
I see.
Yeah. And so that's the other thing. It's the undermining of the meritocracy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, anything that interrupts that is an immediate problem for me. Like, if there's some kind of mapped ideological belief somebody brings as a filter to the conversation, I'm like, no, ones and zeros only. Get the fuck out of here.
Well, that's the thing. I wrote a piece about this. There are no diversity requirements in professional sports teams.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
Because the goal is to win.
Yeah.
So any consideration other than that would decrease the likelihood of winning.
But it's not just about physical talent either. Like, so in the Kaepernick thing, statistically, he was probably, he wouldn't have been a starter in the league, but he would have been like one of the top backups. Like, he was like the 18th ranked statistical quarterback in the league. However, there is still the the economics of the game for one, but psychology in the locker room. That becomes a big problem if people are constantly distracted by shit. A distracted soldier is a dead soldier. That's a phrase that we use.
Yeah, like, I don't. That's something. I know nothing about football. I know about the Kaepernick case, but
yeah,
I,
but you know about psychology, and you know how psychology is infectious. If somebody's around and they're stressed out all the time, they're going to stress other people out. So you're saying
that him kneeling was the cause of divisiveness?
No. I'm saying that the reason teams wouldn't employ him isn't because he wasn't good, and I don't think it was necessarily even because of the stance itself. I think it's because of the distraction it created.
Oh, I see.
You know what I mean? Because that's a big problem.
Yeah, I can't speak to that. I don't know anything about it.
Well, we'll get you signed up for football next. Right.
That'd be impressive if you could do that.
Here's the next thing, and I'll get that video queued up because I want him to hear this. Speaking of social justice, so this BLM guy, what's his name? Hawk Newsom, the New York BLM co-founder, who's been in the news before. he had a meeting with Eric Adams, the new mayor of New York, mayor to be. And they discussed plans, or they were debating whether or not New York should return to tougher policing. Now, of course, this is in the...
Well, he campaigned on that.
Yeah, he campaigned on it, one, and two, it's in the midst of like record, like early 90s style New York crime.
Yeah, and the gaslighting on that is pretty crazy as well.
It's wild. Yeah. I mean, the gaslighting on...
The crime industry,
when it comes to statistics and data over the years, has been absolutely insane. It's about 9 black people per year unarmed get shot by police.
Yeah, so that's my litmus test for the woke, is how many unarmed black men, unarmed were killed by police in 2019. Yeah. A neighbor of mine, a physical neighbor of mine, said 22,500. But if you look at other studies and other data, young black men are more likely to be roughed up by the police, even by black officers.
Yeah, that's
but
correct,
they're
yeah.
less likely to be that whole that they're. You imagine if they're 22,500. Are you out of your fucking mind? 22. That's like a Holocaust.
Right. It's also not true that the media and the left will consistently use the 30,000 gun deaths a year.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
67% of which are suicides. They leave that out.
Yeah.
I mean, Rogan used to do a great bit on this. He was talking about evolution and how people get crazy when you say they came from a monkey. Well, it's just technically, you didn't come from a monkey. Yeah, it's a shared ancestor. But either way, you, a chimp and a human, I think it's like 96% DNA match or something like that. Like, if you had a sandwich and it was 96% shit and 4% ham, would you still be willing to call that a ham sandwich? You would be a crazy person to do that. And if 67% consistently over the last 40 years of track data of gun deaths or suicide, you got to think that's some kind of mental health issue, right? You have to. And then you have to wonder what role does mental health play in the other gun deaths as well? I mean, that's a big red flag for me.
Yeah, Michael Shermer's written some fantastic stuff on that. And I guess it comes down to, I just mentioned when I walked in the studio, I've been 53 years, I never owned a gun.
Until recently?
Yeah, now I have a lot of guns everywhere around me.
Any particular reason? Do you just like shooting them? Or?
I'm not very good shot, frankly, but I feel, this is such an amateur thing to say, but it's true, I feel really good about my gun safety now. I've had courses in gun safety. I've seen what happens to Portland, happened in Portland. I've seen the police response, and I've undergone significant personal threats and threats to my safety. So, I have Glocks, I have ARs, I have rifles, I take them and I shoot them. Not very good shot, but.
Well, it's fun, right?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Now, this guy, Hawk Newsom, I doubt he owns a gun because it's New York, and I don't know if you're allowed to even do that there. But after a meeting with the incoming mayor, he had this to say. I don't know. Is this the right part of the clip? Okay.
There's no other mayor that was running or that has held.
I want the clip of homeboy standing outside. Yeah. There we go. Yeah, hit the mute button there, guy.
It doesn't actually have sound. It's just music behind it.
Okay, well, there's a million of these videos. God damn it.
Fire him!
This is the one you sent me an email.
Don't fire him.
Yeah,
don't
there's an implied task here. Come on. Go to his Twitter account or some shit, or his Instagram. It's on there, too.
Anyway, why he does that, what is the...
Here's what the guy says. Yeah. So they have this conversation outside, or inside, rather, about if Adams is going to return, if he's going to do what he said he's going to do to get elected, which is what happened, by the way. And the guy replied, if they think they're going back to the old ways of policing, then we're going to take to the streets again. There will be riots, there will be fire, and there will be bloodshed.
Mm.
Now, I want to dissect that for just a second, just from a legal standpoint. Mm. If X doesn't happen, right, then our organization is going to commit acts of violence. That is the definition of terrorism.
I would ask him, in total sincerity, what do you want? Like, how can we work with you?
That's been done a number of times.
So what was the response been to that?
They want to dismantle the police entirely, right? Their response is
that... There are multiple responses.
Dude, if you want me to give you a rational statement from this dumb right here, that we're going to be here all day. You know what I mean? Like, it's like asking a fucking 20-year-old white girl Portland State University, tell me about critical race theory. Why? Just thinking... And just gum clicking and stuff, and it just the dumbest shit you've ever heard in your life, and they feel like they've accomplished something.
Yeah, I mean... So I guess the question is, at core he must want something. Like, okay, we have the dismantle the police, we have the defund the police, and we have the extreme of the abolish police. There's an article in the New York Times. Yes, we really do mean abolish the police. Mm-hmm. After all the gaslighting, no, we don't want it to defund, and then they're talking about dismantling. But I do think it's important to listen to whatever his concerns are. Obviously, it's a complete derangement syndrome to think that that's the case, that we're going to dismantle the police. But what is his alternative? What does he want? What is he looking for? I mean,
for this guy specifically, I don't know. But I mean, the typical BLM answer is to destroy the patriarchy.
Yeah, that's correct. Here's part of the problem with that. So part of the problem with that is, and I find this all the time in my Twitter feed, et cetera, there's so much static, there's so much craziness that it makes it very difficult to look at what the legitimate criticisms are. And I think it's really important as we have to function together as a society,
sure,
right? So we need it to some point, and maybe it's not this individual specifically, like, what are the problems? You know, is there a thin blue line? Is there, like, we need to look at those, and if police, and there's a good organization, LEAP, which is working on police reform, and they're all former police officers themselves.
Yeah, I know some of those guys.
Yeah, so we need to figure out what the problem is to fix it, because again, I think the defining, the frame for that should be we're all Americans.
For sure,
and we need to figure that out.
I think the conversation should go something like, that side says we don't want particularly young black men to be targeted by police anymore. So you're like, targeted how? And if you say shooting or unarmed shooting,
okay,
then
so
we need to address that with actual data, right?
Okay, so that's...
And then say that's not the problem. Obviously, the data says it's not. So you're talking about the roughed up part, because if that's a problem, then we do need to fucking address that. But stop talking about the other shit, because it doesn't help.
Okay, so part of the problem is, and there was a great exchange, actually with my jiu-jitsu coach, Matt Thornton, who's Conor McGregor's coach's coach.
Mm.
He had a great exchange with Ali Rivzi about that. And the idea that you frequently hear over and over, and that was on Letter, if anybody wants to look at it, is that there are problems with race in policing due to the number of arrested and incarcerated black men, so that the police have some kind of animus against young black men.
Right.
But it's very interesting. One of the things he says in that exchange is nobody says that about, nobody says that the police are biased against men, but the reason for that is the police have far more contact with men. I mean, if you look at the data, particularly the data on violence, and Matt has a great book coming out now, it's called The Gift of Violence. You mentioned Harris. Yep. Harris, I think, blurbed it. It's going to be on Harris's podcast, and I think Connor blurbed it, and John Connor. But anyway, the idea behind that is that so that we know, for example, for violence, there are three criminogenic factors. We can guess two of them. Nobody wants to talk about the third because it's the third rail. Like it's the
right.
So it's we know that it's age. Mm. We know that it's male, frankly.
Yeah. Same thing with suicide, by the way.
Yeah, well, the thing that nobody...
That's why I always bring up the connection between the massive amount of gun deaths that are suicides and just crime in general, because both subsects are usually men between 15 and 45 in that range.
And then the successful suicides is a higher rates among men.
Way higher, yeah.
Yeah.
Because they use guns and not pills.
And that's not an urban myth either.
No, that's real.
But the third thing that people don't want to talk about is their... a father in the home.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Is there a father in the home?
Well, I mean, the number one predictor of crime is poverty, I guess, historically.
If that were true in the Great Depression, the crime rates would have been very high.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah.
People were just trying to survive then, and I think that's the difference, right? So if you poverty and a fatherless home, not necessarily even a fatherless home, but it is
a fatherless home.
I know, but
we don't
maybe,
need to be politically
if,
correct.
But even if you expanded it out, maybe it's just a community that doesn't have enough male role models that are interacting. Because look, dads die, fucking people get divorced and moved to different parts of the country. Right. Sometimes we're in a new world these days than we were in the 1950s.
Right.
But there's still football coaches and boys and girls club.
Right.
And if you're a single mother, you better fucking have your kid in one, or that kid's going to be fucked in one way or another. It's either going to be crime or they're going to be a weak motherfucker, right? I mean, it's going to be one of the two things.
I think jiu-jitsu is great for that, by the way.
I agree. It's too bad Tim Kennedy was busy today, because I was going to bring him to talk to you about Apogee what he's got going on with his school there. And he's, by the way, he's a UFC
guy,
so
he
would fight you. And time he comes here, I
maybe
mean,
that lasts
fight
like
him.
4 seconds. I'd certainly roll with him if he were here now.
He loves that. Actually, whenever you're back in Austin, let me know and I'll set it up. You guys,
there's
can
a
go
good chance I'll be moving here.
Well, there you go. You can just train at his gym then. That's easy.
Yeah,
enough.
I'd love that. Yeah,
he just built a new one. I think it opens up this month, if I'm not mistaken. With full on, is that like a podcast studio? And
so that's there. one of the things that I love about jiu-jitsu is it just a built-in way to figure out what's true.
Mm.
Like you can't make that shit up. Like you can roll. He could tell literally within 5 seconds how good I was.
Right.
And I could tell how good he was too. Hopefully, we wouldn't be striking each other. But the idea is that you don't find that with a lot of these fashionable educational theories. There is no evidence.
They've manufactured their own evidence.
It's
the pharmaceutical. Well, that is definitely true, but it's also the pharmaceutical industry. There's no money in the cure.
Mm.
There's only money in the treatment, right? It's just like, it's Twitter. It's like, it's the outrage algorithm bullshit because there's no money.
Hey, if it wasn't for the pharmaceutical industry, I have Crohn's disease, I'd be dead right now.
For sure.
I'd be shitting out of a bag or something.
Absolutely.
Bad.
No question about that. But if it weren't for the pharmaceutical industry, people would have gotten AIDS medication basically for free in the late 1980s.
Yeah, I don't know if that's the pharmaceutical industry. I think that's more a product of the system that we're in.
Sure, yeah.
You know, the economic,
I guess.
Political
system. I mean, the pharmaceutical industry is one of the top lobbyists at the U.S. government, right?
Correct.
For politicians. Yeah. So I think
that the top is the old folks, the top lobbies.
Yeah, maybe.
For the AARP and
such. I think the top lobbyists are Apple...
I'm talking about by aggregate funds,
but neither here nor there.
I think that the underlying point, though, is that we know. Look, here's what we have happening, and maybe we can talk about. I think there could be a segue.
Yeah, to the University
of Austin.
Yeah, we can get
here's
into
what
it.
We have happening.
All right, Mr. Bogosian, we've got a little. Got to do some ads here to keep this stuff on the air. First up, GhostBed.com/DrinkingBros. Right now, GhostBed's got their. Their flash sale, 40% off GhostBed bundles when you get a mattress and adjustable base. Use the code DrinkingBros at GhostBed.com/DrinkingBros. They also have the Veterans Day special going on. It's 30. So normally, if you don't use the bundle deal, it's 40, which is 40% off. You can use DrinkingBros anytime to get 30% off. Well, until the end of the week for Veterans Day, it's 33% off. If you use the code DrinkingBros33 at GhostBed.com/DrinkingBros. Get the mattress for about $35 a month. They got like zero financing, pay as you go, 36 months pay as you go program, provided you get decent credit. So best bed, best sheets, mattress, protector, cover, so on and so forth. It's all the best stuff, and it's a company that's taking care of us and taking care of the veteran and first responder community quite a bit. So look into that if you're trying to make a big purchase for holidays. Next up, if you get out of that ghost bed in the morning and you need a little extra pep in your step, go to cartermax.com, use the promo code DB to get 30% off your next four orders. And don't forget that until the end of this week, every purchase made on cartermax.com, $5 will go to the BRCC fund, which helps fund veteran small businesses and charities and shit like that. So make sure you get that stuff. Cartermax, great product, energy intensifier, keeps you pepped up all day. Go to cartermax.com, use the promo code DB to get 40% off your next four orders. Last but not least, on this Veterans Day, we got MyBookie. We were just did the sports show too, talking about gambling on the NFL. Well, in MyBookie, we think more is always better. And that's why MyBookie instantly doubles all first-time deposits. With double the funds, you can double your action. More importantly, double your wins. Getting in the action has never been easier. Just use the promo code DRINKINBROS to get started. The best part is I can bet with all my favorite currencies. You can use crypto. You can use whatever currency you need to get the cash in there. And why not get in on the biggest matchups of the week? This week, we're inching close to the NFL playoffs. There are some pivotal games. One of them is taking place on the West Coast. It's the Rams at the 49ers, two of the better defenses in the league, doing very well. Divisional rivals. Behind MVP candidate Matt Stafford, one of the toughest people I've ever seen in my life. The Rams are looking to continue rolling as they take the fierce 49ers defense. The Rams are legit. I would bet them to cover the spread at mybookie.com. Don't wait. Go to mybookie.com today to redeem your double deposit bonus so you can get into the game, start winning now. To get yourself started, use the promo code DRINKINBROS to receive double your first deposit instantly. That's promo code DRINKINBROS so you can double your funds to double your winnings. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie. All right, Pete, let's get back to it.
We have a bunch of maniacs who've taken control of our educational institutions. Mm. They have purges. They have weaponized Office of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. They have systematically targeted people who don't toe the line or who go against. Like, look at the case of Kathleen Stock, who's right. So she's been called a TERF, and they harassed. Boy, they really harassed her acutely toward the end, and she has argued for women's only spaces. Now you can agree with that, you can disagree with that, but the point is, she was a that was her job,
right?
Right. She was a philosopher. She taught ethics, and she was canceled. She eventually quit her job, and I'm delighted that Ayaan Hirsi Ali and myself and Kathleen are now the founding faculty fellows of the University of Austin in Texas.
Well, that's good. That's good news. So, I want to. Can you bring up Douglas Murray's Twitter right quick? I just want to flash that up there because I think it's funny. But what is the this university? I guess is the charter is diversity of thought.
The charter is a relentless pursuit. It's truth. It's truth oriented. It's a relentless pursuit of truth.
Okay.
And it's go ahead. I interrupted.
Well, no. I mean, I just think the criticism that we're about to see on the screen from this knucklehead that Murray lit up. No, it's not. It's let's see. Sounds like an absolute muppet. That sounds like something he would say.
I think I liked that tweet too.
Yeah. Where is it? Yep, there we go.
Yeah, I actually went to Google Scholar and put her information in, and then I got interrupted. I didn't see what her...
Oh, yeah, I'm sure she does something stupid.
Yeah, I'm sure she... So that's the other thing. So it makes you look like you're more academically accomplished when you are, when all the journals that are set up, they're already geared to publish the things that you already believe.
Right.
So that's the problem. All of the journals have also been ideologically captured.
Isn't that like tautology at that point?
Yeah. Well, it's
like you're just using a word. That's Brett.
It's called idea laundering, which we could talk about. Yeah.
Fucking stupid. So you saw that tweet. That woman's a Muppet, obviously, but I do want to address her question.
Yeah.
And I just from an external perspective, from what I've seen from all of you that I've met and spoken to that are involved in this, her premise is that it's not a real university unless you're doing research. What? Like, how would you not expect this to be researched?
Okay, so there are many, many, many ways you can say that. So if you go to Google, why don't you go to Google Scholar and pull up something? So it's scholar.google.com. And one of the ways that you can figure out how, put my name in there, put Kathleen's name in there, put Ayan Hirsi Ali's name in there.
Yeah.
And so if you go to the profiles, I don't know if my profile or there's a way to, yeah, it's my most cited article. But okay, go back to the page. So basically, if you go to the profile, it'll tell you, yeah. Oh, well. All right, I guess you have to set it up, but it'll tell you who's published what, how much they've published, what ranked journals it in, how often it's been cited.
Who ranked the journals?
Oh, the journals are ranked on the basis of how often they're cited, papers are cited in those. Now, this is what give you,
That's definitely ID laundering.
But it's also fucked up because, you know, we published the piece, The Conceptual Penis is a Social Construct, and that's one of the most cited articles.
Yeah.
It's like two standard deviations above. People are, and the paper's been retracted, and they're actually citing it as if it's a real paper. So it is something, but it speaks.
I like how butthurt everybody got about that, too.
Everybody was enraged.
They should have been butthurt at their own stupidity,
yeah.
But instead they were butthurt at you for exposing it.
Yeah, so when that came out, everyone said, criticized that they went crazy. You should have done this. And this
by the way, what happened is you and it was James Lindsay, right?
Yeah.
And who else? Just you two at first. They wrote like these fake, I guess, fake papers that looked like real papers and submitted them for peer review. And they were just not all of them, but.
So the first paper the first is The Conceptual Penis is a Social Construct. We argue that, thank you very much. It's a very funny paper.
Yeah, it's really funny.
So we argue that penises are responsible for climate change. We put in a bunch of vulgarities, et cetera. Mm. Everybody went crazy. They said, you disprove what you think it does. If it does, you need to do all these things. So I'm like, all right, dude, let's do all these things. So we did all these things. We published, we wrote 20 papers with Helen Pluck-Rose in 10 months, and the Wall Street Journal busted us. Seven of those were published or accepted to be published, and they were completely deranged.
Yeah, they were.
Instead of saying, oh, thank you. I hope you laughed too.
Oh, man.
Thank you.
I read one of them. I can't remember. This is like fucking 2 years ago, I think. But somebody sent it to me as a meme.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I was like, look how crazy liberals are. And whenever I see something like that, I'm probably that's from like Russia or something.
Yeah.
They're just trying to misrepresent the position.
Yeah.
But I did follow the chain down, and then I found the New York Times article.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, oh shit, this is really fucking funny.
Yeah, and so if you want any kind of intellectual integrity, instead of like going crazy and saying these are right-wing lunatics, why not just take a serious look at what happened?
Right.
And that's what you didn't see. And you didn't see it because if you, the first you came for, if you cull out intellectual diversity from a system long enough, you'll have a bunch of people, you'll have ideological homogeneity where everybody believes the same things.
Right.
You'll have a system in place that is basically geared toward replicating that ideology in students.
This is the exact reverse, but the result, I suppose, is the same as the work that Peterson is always talking about in Northern Europe, where there's pretty much
the gender paradox.
Yeah, the equality exists to the best possible degree it can at this point, and women choose things that women like, and men choose things that men like.
Right.
And yours is just the fucking inverse of that. It's the same principle.
And the people who are espousing this ideology, remember, they're not fans of evidence, to say the least.
Right.
Unless it comports with their own worldview. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So the gender paradox is for them. So this is really important to understand. So for them, it's not biology, it's systems. And they think in terms of, so you have to,
and that's critical theory, right? I mean, that's the Foucault bullshit.
Yeah. You have to think in terms of how these people think.
Right.
And so when you think in terms of systems and when you minimize the role that biology plays, the idea is if you could just change the system, you can fix the outcome. And the starting belief is that there is no difference between men and women.
Well, the first part of that sentence makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I think for, as a young person trying to figure out the world, if I can change the system that spitting out this bad data.
Right.
I grew up on computers. I understand if my computer's fucked up and I fix it, then my data becomes good again.
Correct.
That's a pretty easy thing to believe. But the second part, where nothing can be true because it all came through this system, that's a fucking problem.
Yeah, so
they've made that assumption without any evidence to that effect.
Yeah, so a way to think about that, and what the elite calls them, as we just put a chart on Twitter, is that any disparity of outcome has to be due to racism in the system.
Right.
Well, that's just clearly... I mean, anybody who thinks about that,
what about white people
for 30
who fail,
seconds,
though, right?
Well, the argument there is that they still have white privilege. Okay, so here's the thing. If I am going into a system, I will always be able to problematize it. That's what they call it, problematize their language. Yeah. I will always be able to find some problem with it. All right. So, what about Asians? But that's the other thing. Asians and Asian accomplishments. What about Ashkenazi Jews and their accomplishments?
Yeah.
And so it's really interesting. If you think about it from a systems level perspective, you mean to tell me that, and Kenny Hugh has I think is how you spell his last name, has a book about this. But it's also very interesting. The very same people who are freaking out about systemic discrimination are themselves discriminating against Asians in academic enrollment and matriculation processes.
Yeah, I mean, I think people in both directions, whether it's defending a belief or living their life to some ethical degree, whatever it happens to be, will do so to the point of their own comfortability for the most part.
And you know, that's what I've wondered. I've really wondered, like,
that's something we've lost as human beings. Like the struggle to just exist is really important.
Yeah.
That's really important. Everybody's walking around talking about iron sharpens iron, dude.
Yeah.
That's it does. You're absolutely right about that. Yeah. But we need to redefine what we mean by iron. There are things that, like, when your kid comes to you and says, hey, I didn't feel comfortable at school today because of this situation. Okay, so fucking learn to deal with it, buddy. Well, if you have any questions, I'll answer them.
You have two things going on there. One is the sticks and stones may break my bones, but names will never hurt me.
Yeah, where'd that happen?
The problem is that and Lukianoff and Haidt talk about this in the coddling. The problem is that every time you rely upon someone else to not do something to you, you're kind of developing, you're making yourself worse off. Making yourself brittle.
Yep, 100%.
You're making yourself frail.
I feel the same way about addiction, by the way.
Yeah.
People that, like, if you come to the your final conclusion is that I can't even be around this, then it still has so much power over your life. You know what I mean? I think that's a problem. I think there's got to be another step out of that where you can now be.
You should check out Schellenberger's new book, San Francisco.
Oh yeah, I've read it. Yeah, we just had him on the show last week.
Actually. Oh yeah, he's a friend of mine.
Yeah, he's a brilliant
dude. Yeah,
yeah, enjoyed it very much.
And the conclusions that he comes to and forwards in that, they're evidence based, and you can. But so that's the other thing. It's like, okay, so let's say you read San Francisco and you say, well, you know, this is bullshit. I don't agree with it. And what you do is you then present your evidence. And then that's how we get to truth, right? That's how we figure. It's not to bury your head and say, I'm not going to platform a Nazi.
Right, yeah.
It's not my subjective experience tells me otherwise.
Yeah.
What we're in a situation right now where the people who subscribe to this ideology want to remove the tools that we use to solve problems.
Right.
Because they believe that the tools themselves are racist. And the idea there is from Aubrey Lord's, the master's tools cannot disable or dismantle the master's house, like reason, rationality, et cetera, science. Like you can't, those things created the patriarchy and the racist systems, and you can't use. So there, when you remove those tools, well, how on earth are you going to... The scientific method is the single best way to ever figure out anything, period. It's a way to... It's a prophylactic against our own delusions.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's propose, test, observe.
Right. And you have people
now... Propose, test, observe, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Forever.
You have... Yeah, yeah. And that's the other thing. That's what differentiates it from religion. Those are revisible. Right. You can revise those based.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what it means to formulate a belief in the base of evidence is that there could be new evidence that comes in. You change your mind. But that's not in the social justice.
A lot of
ideology.
People have done a lot of pretty good work. I mean, Harris has done some pretty good work on what it means to believe stuff, even down to
chapter three of the moral landscape. Yeah.
Like the all the way down to the neurological level, what it means to really
believe
something.
Yeah, he's published some good papers.
It's pretty interesting. And the way people believe things based on when they learn them in life and how, and if it's evidence-based or not.
And see, that's the thing, you know, the ACEs, the number of ACEs that somebody has, the types of early trauma that have been experienced, they've experienced, is directly correlated to addiction. And actually, it's interesting. You know, you had mentioned words before, and it was resonant in my mind. One of the reasons I think words matter, and someone will find it, so please find it. There was a study that showed the difference between drug addiction and just changing the word to substance use disorder. If a drug addict is a person, and a substance use disorder is something that afflicts somebody.
Right.
And even changing those terms led to better care and better treatment of people who suffer from substance use disorder. So that's not like a politically correct thing. I mean, some people could say it is, but
I mean, maybe to some degree it is, but it's not political correctness for its own purpose.
You know, correct.
There is a reason that we're doing this.
So if we want to help people who suffer from substance use disorder, which I would hope we all would want to do that, provide them with
have empathy or not, if you want to exist in a relatively safe environment, then you want to solve that problem.
Correct.
Right. There's all kinds of
you know, cui bono from from the Latin, like who benefits from having nobody benefits from
that's
this.
Stupid. Yeah. Well, the pharmaceutical industry and the opiate situation, they benefited quite a bit.
Yeah, there's some really interesting interesting material that they called pain the fifth vital and how there's no question that not only were mistakes made, but they were made for the worst possible reasons as the consequences of.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, right? Like, there have been these theories, like, if there was a cure for cancer, what would the pharmaceutical industry do to stop that from getting out? You know what I mean? I think they would go to pretty great lengths, frankly. But when I say they, I don't know what by that.
Yeah, I was just going to ask one of the things I was going to ask.
But I do know that hospitals charge on average about $27 for a single tablet of painkiller, like over-the-counter stuff, right? That's a problem.
So you can talk about, and Obama tried to do this with Obamacare, and I don't know what Biden's doing, but the regulatory apparatus that governs those, I mean, we have a system of healthcare that's broken. And
it's funded by the pharmaceutical industry, right? You've seen this. So a lot of we did a report on this not too long ago, because especially for the particularly in the trials for new medicines, they didn't want that to be they didn't want to have to pay government employees out of taxpayer funds.
I'm not familiar with that.
Right.
Yeah, so I don't know that.
I don't know how this happened in the committee or whatever, but essentially the argument from whatever side it was, I don't know if it was even political, it may have been bipartisan, but the argument was that we don't want the government to have to pay to test your trial drugs, so you're going to have to pay for it. Well, it turns out they just like, if you, the more you pay somebody, the more willing they are to do nice things for you. Who would have thought that, right?
Yeah, so I'm not familiar with that at all. And I would say that the same system of using science and the scientific method is just as appropriate there. By the way, did you see how I used the and not the but?
Oh, yeah. That's a yes-anding. Yeah, I got
it. Yeah, it's a really important thing to do. It's like if someone is listening to this and want to pick up a little trick, and. Because I think it was Tyrion Lannister that said from Game of Thrones, everything that comes before the but.
Oh, no, it was that was Ned Stark.
Was it Ned Stark?
Yeah.
Oh, very good.
Yeah. I remember things when I'm home.
Oh, good.
So let's talk more about the school.
Yeah.
What is your intent exactly? Who's involved? People that other people might know. I know, what's his name? Fucking Jesus Christ. The other
fucking Jesus Christ.
The other pouncer man. Lonsdale.
Joe Lonsdale.
Yeah. So I was, I was just reading something about him the other day, but he's helping get this off the ground, right?
Correct.
know, those guys have, if anybody knows meritocracy, it's people that work in the intelligence and finance communities, right?
Right.
So I don't really care about his involvement that much. I just think it's cool that he's involved.
Right.
What are you trying to do exactly? And to answer that knucklehead's question, what research are you planning on doing? And who all is involved?
So let's go through these in order. One, who's involved? So the board of directors is Heather Hying.
Mm-hmm. We just had her and Brad on the show.
Okay, cool. Barry Weiss.
Cool. She's on the show next week.
Oh, okay.
There we go. We're just gobbling all you people up. Jesus Christ.
Okay, cool. Neil Ferguson.
Okay.
If you had Neil on the show?
Not yet, no.
Neil is, he is like Dan Carlin hardcore history. Like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, like he really should get him on the show.
Yeah,
I'll see him tonight. I'll tell him. So that's the board of directors. The board of advisors is like Nadine Strossen, Steven Pinker, the Larry Summers, former president of Harvard. I mean, just it's a Joshua Katz from Princeton. It's really like a who's who of people who support cognitive liberties, I think,
right,
the way to think about it.
Yeah, who coined that phrase, by the way?
I don't know. I've been using it a lot. I'm sure somebody said it before me, but I have no idea. But it's really what this is about, right? It's about giving people the tools to solve problems and presenting them with the best arguments. And then
I think, therefore, I am. So if I don't govern my own thoughts,
right,
then I don't really exist as an entity, right? You're a philosopher. I don't want to get, I'm high right now, so
that's great.
I don't want to get too deep on it, but that seems like a very fundamental fundamental and universal fucking foundation.
Yeah, you
point
want a,
of life.
You want like, a, you want a mind blow.
Yeah,
you want a mind blow right now.
Yep.
So Descartes came up with this idea. I think
he was French, though. So it's like,
yeah. Well, that we'll cut him some slack. That way. So he came up with this idea. I think, therefore, I am.
Right.
And the very fact that he thought that he couldn't be deceived about his own existence. Are we cool so far?
Yep.
And then American philosopher Charles Sanders Peirce said something that just blew me away.
Mm-hmm.
In order to utter, I think, therefore, I am, you have to have been a member of a pre-existing linguistic community.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, so it's not just, I think, therefore, I am. It's from that you can deduce, and that's a very specific word that people mix up.
Right, yeah.
Right. You can figure out that there had to be some community of language users before you.
Right, even if it was unspoken.
Yeah, so
grunts
language. So in order to say I think therefore I am, that's a very specific thing. They have those words have references, the reference, they mean something. So from that utterance, you can figure out, and they don't have to be live, they could be robots, right? But there has to be a linguistic community that you're plugged in. So you go from the solo to the... All right, so then what was the second thing? Oh, research.
Who knows,
research.
Man. I now I'm thinking about fucking the fact that this is all a simulation. You know what I mean?
Well, Nick Bostrom, who's... You should get him in here. That dude is totally...
We've had...
On his own level.
What's the guy's name from the simulation hypothesis? The fuck's his name? We've had him on like 3 years ago, I think. He's the guy he's the MIT guy that does video game programming as well.
I don't know. I might have found his name.
I think he works at Berkeley too. What is somebody will know?
But you know, Nick Bostrom usually put that high. So here's another kind of cool thought. So this is for everybody who's high. I can't give your audience the high
hopefully
thought.
Hopefully it's mostly.
It's kind of a cool thought. So hopefully it's most of them. That's a funny thing to
doesn't by the way.
But let me throw this thought out. So let's say that you wanted to. We're now in 2021. We're trying to figure out if we're in a simulation. So what do we do? Well, one of the things we do is we can't figure out if we're a simulation. So we create these artificial worlds inside computers, and we basically run a simulation to see if our sims, if you will, our simulated creatures, can figure out if they're in a simulation. And we do trillions of those in tandem. And then we data mine, like the last...
this is Ex Machina, right? I mean, the movie, not the principle.
Yeah. No, this is not. It's like from the last season of Man in the High Castle to a certain extent. But the idea is...
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Right. So the idea is that you would mine these universes to figure out if they were in a simulation, and then you would use that to figure out if you're in a simulation. But at some point, some of those beings in a simulation would want to figure out if they're in a simulation, and they couldn't figure it out, so then they'd do the same thing.
Right.
So here's what's interesting to me, and I've been thinking about this since you're high. I'll give you another something I've been thinking about. So have you heard the expression turtles all the way down?
It's like we're all in a turtle in outer space's dream or some shit.
Yeah,
like
and
that.
You can't have, in philosophy, you called it an infinite regress. Like you can't have an infinite regress.
There's got to be a first and a last.
Yeah. Well, why the fuck not?
Why?
I think that's a superstition.
I think it's because we as beings have a beginning and end, so we just assume everything else does. But there's no evidence to that effect. I mean, I guess thermodynamics
many people, like one of my former mentors, the particle physicist Victor Stenger, who wrote, you know, God in the Multiverse, one of the things that he used to tell me is, you know, there was no beginning and there will be no end.
Well, that's that's what I was going to mention. When you're talking, that whole framework that you described where we're trying to figure out if we're in a simulation, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And then, or no, I'm sorry, that's the second thing I want to say. The first thing is... I think, therefore, I am, meaning that you had to be part of some pre-existing
linguistic
community or communicative in some way, whatever it happens to be. That does kind of sound like the ontological fucking discussion about whether or not there's a God to me. You know what I mean? Like, something had to be there first. But why?
Oh, you're talking about the Kalam cosmological argument.
Yeah. Like, but why would there need to be something there? Why do we presume that there would be something there first? And I think Dawkins said it best. If you're postulating that some intelligent being existed and snapped all this into being, then all these simple processes still had to take place to get us here. Wouldn't it have been infinitely more difficult to create that intelligent being in the first place?
If
he could exist forever, then why can't all of this exist forever?
So two things. One, the if anybody wants a reference for what you're talking about, it's a interesting, very clear, William Lane Craig lays it out in his debate with Alex Rosenberg. You can find it online. Just these premise conclusions about that. The idea is that God is sui causal. Like God is the cause of itself.
Right.
And so it's a perfect being that causes itself. But the theist would say that the gotta never think about this stuff anymore. I just think about it all the time. It's just so, here's the thing. It's just so uninteresting after you've thought about it for a little while and you've kind of figured, I'm like, oh, okay, whatever. Now my friend, I actually mentioned Matt Thornton, Connor's coach, said to me, you know, I said, wow, you know, some of these arguments are really sophisticated for the existence of God. I said, no, they're not. They're not sophisticated at all. So the idea that they're really not sophisticated.
No, it's just, you're just tearing away. Once you built those hierarchies of understanding, then it's the last part is just like, you fucking are kidding me.
Yeah. The theist will say that you have to posit, you know, multiverses and all this stuff to get away from the idea of the Big Bang or, you know, because many people, and Lawrence Krauss is a friend of mine, the theoretical physicist, has said that Victor Stenger and others are wrong in that, and that there is, well, you should have Krauss on your show.
Yeah,
too.
We would love to. I'm a big fan. Yeah, I've been watching his stuff for 15 years at least.
Yeah, he's a super good guy. He's insanely sharp. And Brian Keating would be a good guest for you too.
We've had Brian a lot. Oh, Brian's a good dude. Actually does a special on our social media. Once a week.
Cool. Usually. I'm sorry, I haven't been. I know you're running a culture war. I have no bandwidth now.
You're definitely in the middle of it. The other thing I wanted to mention about the simulations is I like the Matrix model where the subjects of the simulation are
superintelligence is Bostrom's book. It just came to me. Go ahead.
Superintelligence is the name of it?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, super.
And I'm still trying to think of who wrote Battlestar Galactica. I haven't.
These assholes can look that up.
I can't tell me. I just came.
You had more. Oh, just random noise coming out here. The Matrix idea. So if the presumption is that we're in a simulation, instead of trying to create other simulations to figure out if we are, why don't we try to break the simulation we're in?
But the problem with what you just said is that we've tried and we can't figure it out. So the best way we can have
quantum physics kind of
The best way we can have to figure it out is to create other beings and hopefully they'll be able to figure it out and then steal their method of knowing.
Right. That's a problem, right? I think Tyson said something about this, about how we're either the first or the last.
Because Carl Sagan did that.
Was it Carl Sagan? Or maybe he was parroting. I mean, that's his mentor, so maybe he was parroting. Yeah. But yeah, it's like we're either the first or the last because we either just figured this out or the data that we're looking for already exists somewhere. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And
it would exist above us because somebody else would have already figured it out.
Yeah. So I'll throw it out now. And actually,
it's like looking into the mirror with a mirror behind you. And all you see is like.
So I told Krauss this, and this is way outside my area of expertise. But I this is a radical thing to say, but I believe we're alone in the universe.
Not a fan of the Drake equation or anything that stuff?
No, actually, because of the Drake equation, I believe we're alone in the universe.
And why is that?
So. Okay, so this is a longer conversation, but we have, given the sheer, if we're not the first or the last, and we could be, right? We could be the first. There's no way to rule those out. We have not been contacted. We have not seen any evidence whatsoever. Mm. We've not seen, you know, von Neumann probes, self-replicating probes. We've seen absolutely no evidence whatsoever. And given the sheer, given the Drake equation, even at the most conservative, well, maybe not the most, but even at very conservative input variables, you're still looking at a highly populated
like about 10,000 planets per
galaxy. Whatever you would want to put it in.
I mean, it should be about 10,000. The Drake equation predicts, at least with the latest math, is somewhere around 10,000 planets per galaxy. Right. But even then, it would take so long for them to travel.
Well,
but
you would see something else. So that's the thing that people need to do. You know, they've hypotheses, the great filter. That would be the next thing. You know, there's some great filter that you don't. You have to pass at each stage of a species evolution before they could become spacefaring.
Right. Somebody did this. Didn't South Park do this? They did a parody of this where...
it's like a test if you're good enough of a civilization to be a part of the galactic civilization.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
With space bugs.
Yeah. So that's what people need to do. That they need to come up with some kind of mental gymnastics to make justify the lack of evidence to themselves. They say, you know, maybe they have a prime directive. Okay. Right. Well, do you have any evidence? Like that's a show created by Gene Roddenberry. So what people try to do is that
Gene Roddenberry, good writer though. Come on,
he's an excellent writer. Yeah. He's an excellent writer. I'm a huge Gene Roddenberry fan.
Well, a lot of people are.
I never met Lynn anymore. I was utterly devastated when he died.
Yeah,
I was utterly devastated.
He would have been so useful right now. Just a very, very he was. I think he was one of the Neo Stoics, and if he was alive right now, he would definitely be. He would definitely be involved deeply in this conversation.
Yeah.
Right.
It's interesting. I was really happy when they sent Shatner to speak.
Yeah, Shatner was actually in our movie that we made.
Oh, was he really?
Yeah. He's a great dude.
Yeah. He doesn't do podcasts, but, he is a great dude. He loves horses. My cousins in California, they do horse things together. I don't know anything about horses, but
he's, I really enjoy. Yeah. I like that whole group actually, except for, anyway, so, one last thing I want to run by you. I know you don't really follow the news right now, but I wonder if you could comment, not necessarily on the case itself, but on the hysteria around this Rittenhouse situation.
You know, I haven't. Well, I paid zero attention to it.
Okay.
Like, truly, it's just not of interest to me.
Honestly, it's because of what I do, I have to keep up with it. But it's a use of force issue. In my brain, it's just like... Yeah. Or are the technical aspects of this correct? Okay, then that's the end of the conversation.
Yeah.
But obviously it doesn't work like that. So that's what I want you to talk about. So these things that
I've followed not about zero.
Not about this case specifically. I just mean the proclivity for the public to overreact and use... Yeah.
Moral panic.
It's moral panic, but there's also these deeply ingrained presuppositions that have been fed that are incorrect that they're now applying to this. I mean, if you put red... tinted glasses on somebody and told them that the sky's blue, they would call you a liar.
Mm. Yeah, like They Live, but more extreme.
Yeah, a little more extreme. Yeah, but I mean, that's the principle. So how do you defeat that? How do you pull the lens off? I mean, waking up is what Harris calls it. But
here's what the easiest, simplest way you can do. In philosophy, it's called a defeasibility question.
Okay.
But you can look at it in terms of a disconfirmation question, and you can ask somebody a simple question. Under what conditions would you be willing to change your mind about that?
Right.
Now, if they say there are no conditions I'm willing to change my mind about that, then the response to that is, well, then that belief is not formed on the basis of evidence.
It's not falsifiable.
Yeah.
Right.
So you believe this about the case or whatever it is. Mm. What would it take for you to change your mind? Like, I'm not saying I can do that. I'm just asking.
Yeah, for sure.
No, but that's how you frame it so that they don't feel... They don't invoke a defensive posture.
This is actually the last question that was asked in the debate between Ken Ham.
Bill Nye. That's correct.
Bill Nye, who's not a scientist, but whatever.
Right.
But yeah, I've referenced that on the show all the time.
Right.
Like if your claims aren't falsifiable, then they're not rooted in any kind of reality whatsoever. They're fun thought experiments.
Then you should hold them with less confidence. And here's the other thing that goes along with that. One of the things that I'm deeply disturbed about now is that there's not a lot of suspicion about people's beliefs, young people in particular, when they believe pretty much what everybody else believes. And if you're believing what everybody else believes, you should be suspicious. I'm more concerned that you're not suspicious that you believe what everybody else believes than the content of what you actually believe.
You asked me if I had to triage this. The reason that I think that we're in big trouble is because that the counterculture has become conformist to authoritarianism. That's a big problem.
That's a great, what you just said is great. And I want to go back to something you mentioned before. And I've said this a million times, and it's gotten to this point, I've almost given up. Like, I am sick of conservatives saying, look at all the liberals controlling the institutions. No. These are authoritarians.
Yeah.
These are very particular type of authoritarian controlling institutions.
It's the ants in the jar metaphor. I don't know if you've ever heard it.
No.
But if you put red and black ants, fire ants and regular ants, in a jar together with dirt, they will move things around and go about their lives relatively peacefully and will ignore each other for the most part. Yeah. This is real. You can actually do this experiment at home. If you shake the jar, they will attack each other, thinking that the other one caused it because they look different. Or you can map that onto feel different.
See, I've never heard that, but that's fascinating to me.
They never stopped to question who shook the jar in the first place.
So let's say that analogy, analogize outward. The response to that, and I'm not saying it does, but the response to that would be exactly the opposite of what we're doing now. It would not be to teach people to look at each other on the basis of immutable characteristics and racial traits. It would be to do exactly the opposite.
Intersectionality is the dumbest shit of all time. It betrays one of the more fundamental things about humanity, in my opinion. And that is, if you see this pop up in philosophy, you see it pop up in Sun Tzu, everywhere. Yeah. If somebody's trying to divide you, they're trying to conquer you, right?
Yeah.
That is one of the fundamental premises, I think, of life and sociology and how it works.
And the key is not to go down and to ever find a gradations, et cetera. The key is to go up into supraordinate. From physics, like, we're all humans, you know. You're whatever it is, whatever commonality that we have.
The greatest common factor instead of the least common denominator.
That's correct.
Right? Instead of thinking about all the things, and look, we can think about all the things that
we all want clean air, we all want clean water, we all want our health.
That's what Maslow tried to do, right? He's like, look, I understand that everybody's got a lot of problems, but more or less, here are what the main ones are, and here are kind of how they are ranked in order of how we respond to them.
And I would again say, I think it's really important as we attempt to navigate this that you, and John McWhorter talks about this in his new book, I think it's really important as we attempt to navigate these things that we're not just ripping down stuff, you know, like we're building the University of Austin here in Texas.
Right.
We're trying to create and make things better. And as long at every point that truth is your North Star. And I want to say one more thing. That's why it's so important to have friendships of virtue. Right. That's why it's so important that if you have a problem with me and I have a problem with you, that's how we started this. And I guess that's how I'll end it.
Right.
You come to me and say, hey, Boghossian, man, you, what on earth? And I'll come to you and I'll say, well, wait a minute. And I'll know that you're forthright in your speech. And you, so you'll know when I'm speaking to you, you know exactly what you get. I know who you are. And that way, when we each say what we mean, we can have an actual relationship.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, a real relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's the two principles that I try to use in that are, one, the principle of charity,
right,
which we've talked about a lot on this show. And two, it's the principle Jordan Peterson talks about we talked about it the first time you were on the show, where if you and I are in a debate about something, or if it's marriage counseling happening, if I have a point of view,
right,
it is required during that process for the other person to explain my point of view to me.
That Rappaport's rule.
To my satisfaction, right? That's super. I think that's something that if you apply those two principles, you're going to have disagreements, obviously, because people have different perspectives, but at least there won't be any confusion about the two. And I think one of the biggest problems now is not just confusion, but intentional confusion. You know what I mean?
I think that's right. And again, most people, the core of all wokeness is true, right? I mean, it really is. There has been horrific discrimination. Yep. There has been.
That's why it's so easy to believe.
And so the question is, how do we work together to get over that? And look, there are far more wrong answers to a question than there are right answers to a question.
Yep.
And if you want to solve any of this, you have to be forthright. You have to be honest. You have to look at the evidence. You have to listen. I know that's not something that's in vogue right now, but you have to really try to listen to what the other person is saying. Repeat it back to them. That's the Rappaport's rule, which you just talked about. Only after you've done all these other things should you think about criticizing. And at some point in this process, and I would argue from the very beginning, you have to be willing to change your mind.
Right.
Because if you're not willing to change your mind, you're an ideologue. You've become the thing you hate.
Yep. I agree with that 100%. Well, you've learned a lot today, folks. Stay tuned for more about the University of Austin. I assume you're going to be moving here just like everybody
else.
Luckily, you can either bring all your guns with you, or I think they give you...
I can't wait to get out of Portland.
I think they give you a bunch when you get here. I don't remember. either way, thanks for coming on the show today. We really appreciate it. Tell people where they can find you and your work and stuff.
Twitter, Peter Boghossian, PeterBoghossian. I have a Substack. I have a webpage, Boghossian.com, BoghossianCom. So I'd love to hear from you. And if you want to help me in my work and what I'm doing, and that doesn't mean financially necessarily, I mean any way possible, if you want to move the needle and make people more sane, that would be appreciated.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, guys. We'll see you here in a few minutes. In about 10 minutes, we're going to have Cassius Marsh, the linebacker from Chicago that got flagged for some dumb shit last week on the Sports Channel. So tune in. See you later.
Hockey fans, can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at USAHockeyNTDP.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.